You're listening to CounterTalks, Canada's podcast for the equipment and event rental industry. CounterTalks is a presentation of Canadian Rental Service Magazine. Now here's your host, Patrick Flannery.
Okay, hi folks, welcome to CounterTalk. Pat Flannery coming at you here again. And today I have Dan Crowley with me from Executive Peer Groups. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the program, Patrick.
Yeah, it's great to see you virtually here. I caught Dan's act at the national show, the Canadian Rental Association National Show in Ottawa. I guess that's getting on for a couple of months ago now. And Dan impressed with not just his business acumen and understanding of all things sort of MBA, I guess to coin a term, but also with his exposure to the rental industry, and that's a combination we don't get every day. It's very nice to have somebody. There's a ton of management consultants and people like that out there with all kinds of things to say about company culture, et cetera, et cetera. But Dan brings a real understanding of the rental industry to it. And so, Dan, why don't you, I guess, explain sort of in a roundabout way how you got that level of exposure, I guess, just by introducing yourself and what you do at Executive Peer Group.
Sure, absolutely. I appreciate that. Yes, it's always a pleasure, by the way, to get out into the marketplace, especially a place like Ottawa, where I don't get to spend much time. We're located in the Philadelphia market, for anyone who's trying to find peer executive groups on the map. And we are work nationally and internationally from a perspective of we have Canadian members. And we continue to expand. But my background with rental is kind of an interesting one. I had always been interested in small business consulting, and I'm a bit of a serial entrepreneur. I've had a number of employees through collision centers and truck shops and subway franchises and things like that. And realized that I enjoy talking about it more than doing it, obviously. So that I think separates it, those who can't do teach, right? So that's my claim to fame. I became a coach to two equipment rental operators back in the early 2000s, and really enjoyed working with them, their organizational structure, the game / job of getting solutions into the hands of different construction and or could be event planning, right? Events coming up like weddings and things like that. So enjoyed working with those businesses, and they had a little bit of background on my background in the past and knew that I ran peer groups for the automotive side, car dealers. And so they had asked, hey, can we do something like that for the rental industry? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it, because I never say no to anything. It sounds like fun. We get to travel, have meetings offsite, right? So that's what we did. So 2001, we had our first peer group, and that group, believe it or not, still meets today. They're going to be meeting in the Laguna Beach Huntington Beach, Newport Beach area in another month in Southern California. And they've been together for 23 years now. And I've been the facilitator, facilitator is a person who essentially just makes sure that peers are learning from each other, right? So the idea is I might know something about coaching or helping you with your business, but no one knows better than somebody who's just gone through what you've gone through. So what we do is we group business owners in groups of 10 in the same industry. So if you're event rental, you go with event rental. If you're equipment rental, general tool rental, you go with that. If you're hybrid and you've got some equipment dealership activity, we might put you in a dealer group. And it just allows you to kind of learn from your peers. We are saying in peer groups is shared experience brings individual success. And so at this point, we have about 235 members, and our job is just make it easier for them.
There's something about this industry, isn't there, that everybody seems to derive so much benefit from just getting together like that, right? And sharing
Yeah.
their experiences. I don't always find that in some of the other markets that I work in. Some of the more, how would I put it, professional, more technical engineering oriented stuff. Those are other areas that I work in. But rental people really benefit from getting together and just swapping their experiences, don't they?
Yeah, it's shocking to me to think about how open these small business owners are with each other. And I think a lot of people who come to the industry from outside the industry, that's the first thing they mention. We see a lot of corporate North America kind of choosing a second path in life, leaving behind some corporate world activity and getting into small business. And you're getting into an industry that you need to learn as quickly as you can, or else it will eat you up, right? And I will say that I've never seen an industry where more individuals have helped each other through tough times, as well as understanding what it means to move through the phases of business ownership inside of a rental business. So it's just been outstanding, and of course, it's allowed us to thrive as an entity that tries to make those connections happen. So.
Yeah, especially when you get people together that are not in the same town.
Yeah. That helps.
That's what it really takes off. But yeah, it's I echo you 100%. That was my first and amazing impression when I got involved with this industry 12 years ago. Immediately amazed at how, everybody's kind of just working together and helping each other out, like literally helping each other out, like they're on a team. And sometimes people in the same city, yes. It doesn't. Well, I just did a profile with GTA Equipment Rentals in Oakville, and they considered some of the big franchises moving in down the street. It's been a benefit to them. Because all they do is go back and forth with equipment and help each other out all the time. So it's a weird industry that way.
Yeah, it is. And I would say that they're faced with challenges, especially, right now. I'd say the labor market has posed quite a significant challenge to the industry. And so it's kind of like, well, who's going to evolve that? Who's going to move that to the next step? And then how quickly can we learn from that and adapt and help ourselves get there? I don't think anyone begrudges each other making a profit. I think the key is there's tremendous respect in the industry. They're not stealing employees, so to speak. There's a lot of sharing of the wealth on best practices. And so, associations like the Canadian Rental Association, as well as peer group type formats like our company, I think have been helpful to continue that, push that information around to each other and help each other.
And in the spirit of that, I wanted to focus down today on what you were talking about at the CRA show in Ottawa, and that is labor, and well, maybe a bigger picture on labor, in that creating the kind of culture that's going to help you get what you want out of your workforce and as a spin-off out of your company. So let's start, Dan, with from your perspective, having to spoken to all these rental stores, having just done the CRA event, what are the challenges in the rental labor market right now? What's
Sure.
facing people? What are all our listeners struggling with?
Absolutely. Well, first off, I just want to say that the number one asset that you have as a business is your employees, right? So it comes down to waking up and recognizing that every day, making sure that you're in regular conversation and communication with those employees to get the best productivity, to make it be fair, make sure that there's give and take between the labor forces as well as ownership. But I would say that when it really comes down to it, looking at the data, 67 cents of every expense dollar or every dollar that's is used is labor, right? So it's 67 cents of every dollar. So it comes down to, all right, I've got to generate sales. And we know that from a sales standpoint, it used to be that the labor force would cost about anywhere from 23 to 30 cents, maybe 33 cents of every sales dollar. That has changed drastically, especially with regard to event rental. So, my thoughts and prayers are with my brothers and sisters who are doing that. It's quite a bit, tent installation and just the labor force, the cost has gone up. So you're really looking at labor costs in the 40s. And so what we've said is, well, what's the first thing I can do as a business owner? And when it comes to that, kind of managing that cost. Well, we know that the from what we see in people submitting financials to us is retention. So it comes back to turnover. And there it's very important for every business owner listening out there to understand that there's good turnover and there's bad turnover. And what you want to do is you want to measure your bad turnover and try to eliminate it. And if you can eliminate it, you will absolutely reduce your expenses as they relate to labor. And that is simply because you're not investing in recruiting and training and development as much as your peers. And for those dealing with turnover all the time, many times that happens because there's not communication and follow through in your organization about your culture and what matters to you as an owner, right? So, when a person leaves you, they're not leaving you because they don't like your values or your, where your company's going from the direction you're providing a vision for them. No, they're leaving you because of their boss. I don't like my direct report, and so that really comes down to you creating the type of environment where there's so much communication and so much follow through that nobody's going to leave because of their boss, because that boss is not a bad egg and you have people lining up with your vision. So I think to me, in a nutshell, that would be where I'd start.
That's a very good point. I think good bosses, maybe trained bosses that have some
Correct.
idea of how to approach these things beyond the purely intuitive. I mean, some people come to it naturally, but some training, some information is probably useful. I wanted to pick up on what you said about retention. Something that goes on in the rental industry is very much seasonal employment. People are brought in at for the busy times of the year, and then basically it's understood that you're going to be walking away through the winter, and then we hope to see you back next spring or not, right? And I've spoken to many companies that have gotten lucky with that. They've got the people that come back spring after spring until finally they say, okay, keep an opening comes up and we'll keep you here full time, or growth allows them to keep their full time. Dan, what do you think of that practice? I've often gone, man, it seems like if you could find some way to have fewer people all the time instead of this fleet of transients, you'd see, I guess, intangible benefits out of that. I mean, I know it seems like a great idea. I'm gonna pay the minimum wage and then I don't pay them when they're not here, and that makes sense on a very surface level. But what do you think of that?
You're hitting the nail on the head. It's the number one challenge for most small businesses in the rental space is exactly what you're mentioning. And so what we have found is that it does get easier as you get larger. So that's number one. Number one, not going to say grow or die, but I'm going to say grow, grow your business, right? It's going to help you because you will get to that space where there's continuity and continuation on a level below ownership. And that's so critical. If you can find a way to utilize the workforce beyond what you utilize them for in the summer months, then by all means, that's the way to go. I think, when it comes to general tool and equipment, we see that happen, especially in the northern US states, southern Canadian states, when it comes to some of the more winter activities. Salt comes to mind and the activity around that. Heat is a big part of what's happening. Power generation, those types of things, anything that can carry through the winter months and help the business. Think about your model and say, what is it that we provide to the marketplace? And again, we're not saying you can up and leave a marketplace. We don't expect anybody to do that. But if you are starting with one arm tied behind your back related to that, then you certainly need to figure out a plan. And we do work with people on that. So we see some of that lighten up as we get into business planning.
As an example, that just came to mind while you were talking, I just ran a news item yesterday that the ARA, the American Rental Association, is going to be running a train the trainer lift training session in BC coming up very soon. Obviously, rental stores can send in a staff. They become, I guess, so adept, or at least they learn how to train others to use lifts, right? So now you have an in-house trainer who can train your customers or train other staff how to use the lifts. Now, so over the winter, okay, the construction sites have shut down. There's not as much going on. You've got your heat, you've got your salt, but it's still quiet. But you want to keep this person on. Wow, how about having lift training? For instance, this is an idea, but I
Yeah,
mean,
no.
how about running something like that over the winter? You retain the employee, you give them something to do, you have a nice little revenue stream, stuff like that, right?
Yep, absolutely. No,
Yeah.
you're right. I think you're hitting on it right there, which is utilizing the resources, whether it be your space
Yeah.
or your employees. In a way that keeps them busy, right? And allows you to continue relationships, even expand relationships, right? So I think that's pretty crucial. I will throw out a comment that the project activity obviously goes up in the winter, and there's usually plenty of it. Understanding your processes and best practices around your processes, documenting that, making sure that everybody's trained on it, right? Because you're going to have some of that. So if you can bleed into, coming out of the busy period and into the slower periods, and utilize the time in that way, lots of times you'll get to that point where you will build a bridge over to the spring and be able to retain a couple more employees here and there. And I think that's really what it comes down to. There's no question, like, somebody letting seven people go, and then having to pick seven up at the, 3 months later, 4 months later, is very difficult. So, if you can continue to minimize that number, keep it lower. The other thing I would mention is we, as business owners, have a tendency to live hand to mouth, just like we do as an employee. We take our income and we spend it. So what we have to do as business owners is really start to understand the profits that come through and how it's affected by cash flow. If I could, if my children were coming into the business, the first thing I would have them focus on is cash flow management, understanding what a statement of cash flows looks like. In QuickBooks, you're going to have your income statement and balance sheet, but let's talk about cash and what's going to happen. Those statements look at your bank accounts at the beginning of a period and then at the end of the period. So if you can plan out your cash accordingly, lots of times you will have built a little bit of a nut that you can use in those down periods to sustain the employment, and spend the money on the payroll as opposed to being like out of cash.
Yeah.
Lines of credit too. I see people use line of credits in that manner to
Yeah.
get them over a period.
Yeah, just leverage it through the slow time, or have a yeah, just have a cash flow plan. It's a remarkable concept, Dan. versus I made all my money in the summer. I went on a vacation in the winter, and then I blew all my money on new equipment in the spring, and now I'm hoping to and now I'm hoping to have a good enough summer that I can go on vacation again next winter. That's the typical rental cash flow plan, I think, at the smaller level. But no, your point is well taken too, that larger does make it easier, for sure. And if you've got a bigger organization, you've got some facility to upkeep, you've got a bigger fleet to upkeep, you have some procedures and things that you can look at over the winter months. Good ways to keep employees on. Let's move on to this word culture. It's one that I think people hear, people know about, people talk about so much, and a lot of times it's like, well, what do we even mean? That's probably not a mystery to you, but I think a lot of small business owners out there find it to be frustratingly vague. I guess the question to you is, and the important point that you made at the show was how the culture and the employment and retention practices kind of can mesh together and can reinforce each other, and can make your place more successful at retaining employees. Can you just get into that for us and tell us what the role of culture
Sure.
is in labor?
Absolutely. Well, first, I want to do a shout out to Gino Wickman, who wrote the book Traction. And Traction has been adopted by a number of rental owners. They are implementing Gino's system called the Entrepreneurial Operating System. So a lot of these ideas can be found on their website, eosworldwide.com. You can also pick up the book Traction. We give it away to our peer group members. So we've given away about 200 books, which is great. But the key there is, you have culture in your business, whether you think you do or you don't, right? Everyone has a culture. So what is your culture? And part of that is saying, like, well, what's my frustrations? What are creating stress in my life? But I would say, like, an easy way to start to get your arms around your culture is to begin with a vision, which it has to do with a point in the future, a destination you're heading towards. What's it going to look like? So the more you can get those ideas down on paper, what it looks like, and the king of this was Michael Gerber, who wrote the book E-Myth. He said, hey, create a strategic objective. It is a point and a place in time in the future. And he did a great job in that book to talk about really having a, like, in your mind's eye, what's it look like? How many employees? Where is it located? All of those things. What's your perfect picture in the future? So you create that vision. And then the second piece, and by the way, if you're interviewing an employee this week or next week, or don't talk about where you've been. I love that you've been around 40 years and you've established yourself in the marketplace. It's meaningful on some levels. What employees want to hear, especially the Generation Z and the millennials, they want to know, like, where you're going, right? Like, if I'm going to come to work for you and I'm young, I want to go to a place where they're going somewhere where I see forward potential, right? So talk about where you're going, and you'll be surprised at your ability to create some glue with those people. But getting back to this idea of culture, the vision's the number one element. The second element is your values. And people say, well, what does that mean? What are my values? What is our company values? And a lot of owners say, well, it's me, it's my values. I'm going to look at myself and say, what's important to me? I want to everybody to have integrity and all that. I also say, look at your favorite employee, or your two favorite employees, or your three favorite employees, and say, what is it about them that you like? And just brainstorm words out there. And pretty soon you'll have a picture of your values, what you value as an owner in the form of your employees. And so that's really then becomes the litmus. And so you're going to evaluate every single recruit and every single prospect and say, do they have these values? You're going to look at your existing bodies in your business And guess what? The ones that frustrate you the most, those are the ones that are not lined up with your favorite employees, right? They don't look quite the same way. So I think that really is about culture. I can tell you that when our members start to work on this as part of peer groups, it's one of the biggest impacts on their turnover. So they reduce their turnover. They can grow and add positions a little bit better. They seem to get a little bit better employees, but a lot of that is that work up front, which is not related to renting a piece of equipment, right? It's more about taking the time to look at your business from 40,000 feet up.
Yeah, I love that point so much at the conference that I pulled it out and put it in my conference podcast.
Nice.
That was the one part I thought was and what was neat. Like I think what people need to do is is envision the process. You go around the room and you're asking people, tell us what you like about your favorite employee. What's a quality that you would assign to your favorite employee? And see, if you just ask people, well, what do you look for in an employee? They're gonna think of they're gonna want all good things, right? All the good things. But when you ask it that way, everybody comes with something different, right? There's one person will say integrity, another person will say hardworking, another person will say easy to get along with. You know, like there's all these different things. And I just thought that point was terrific that when you get that answer from the owner of the business, they are saying something about themselves. Then and they are now putting it almost in one word, their own company culture. This is the thing that is the most important thing to me. And believe it or not, it's different from company to company, right? It's a process in the old advertising world we used to call branding, where in order to tell others about your company, you have to understand your company. You have to understand what's different and special about your company. And you know, it's just a process not everybody thinks to go through, but it's helpful. And and yes, to your point, how helpful is that in deciding who to keep, who to let go, who needs help, you know, whatever. I mean, how aligned is this individual with with my culture, right? That's where it can help on that end as well, not just on the public facing end.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things that we look for in our peer group meetings is, you know, they go around the room and they talk about the job market, what it looks like right now. And there are people in there that will still say, you know, oh, we can't find anybody. Or if we find somebody, they never show up for the interview and things like that. And you need to take that into your own hands and say, well, where do these people go and why do they want to work at certain places? And try to create that type of you know, environment for them as they go through the process with you. There's a number of books, and of course, I don't have them at the top of mind right now, but I love when I read in a book that they're handholding that prospect through to the offer and then the orientation and then the onboarding of the employee. So, you know, if you think about it, there's all sorts of statistics that say, well, you know, that some people get buyer's remorse and they change their mind, like they don't show up for work that first day, or they come to work for a week and then they don't come back. And I'm thinking of my tent installing friends, right? So it's like, holy cow, that's hard work, right? So from my perspective, it's like, how are you doing that? I remember this goes back 20 years. I was always like, when you hire an employee, sit with them as if you're reviewing their performance on a weekly basis the first month. So weekly basis the first month, monthly basis the first quarter, and then quarterly basis the first year. Now, that sounds like a lot of sitting down. And it certainly is. You know, obviously we don't talk about it as job performance evaluation as much and performance review. Instead, we're talking you know, conversation. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about it. And so, you know, I for those of you who hate that kind of thing and hate the systems, they're in the Traction book, they talk about a thing called 555. Totally love it. You always keep it in mind. All it is you have established 3 to 5 values in your company, you'd hope at this point. So then you just say, let's talk about those 3 to 5 words as it relates to you. You know, how do you feel about it? How do I feel about it? Then you move on to the next five, which is the 3 to 5 roles that that person is given in their job. So you don't need to look at the job description. You just need to say, these are your big three. These are the three things we expect in that role. And you know, how you feel about it. Do you get the job? Do you want this job? Do you have the capacity to do the job? Let's talk in terms of those things. Yeah. And then the last piece, so you got 5, 5, 5, the last five is in that particular period of time, whether it's a quarter or whatever, there might be 3 to 5 projects or activities that you gave them tasks to do. And you know, you just want to say, like, how was that? How did that go? Now, that sounds like a lot. I can tell you when you do it, I'm not a people person, even though you might think I am. I don't like to manage employees. But doing that 5, 5, 5, I look like a genius. Like, I'm talking to these employees, and they're usually I'm struggling to figure out what to talk to them about. I'm usually talking at them. But if I'm asking them questions about that 5, 5, 5, it's so awesome. They like open up and they really communicate well with you.
That is some great and solid advice. When so how can we know in advance? And probably what I'm trying to lead you to here, Dan, is your wonderful personality test circular, your circles that you had that everybody had a lot of fun with. I did mine, by the way, and it came out, I think, almost exactly the same as yours, believe it or not. It was all this
Nice.
dogness
That's
with
why
reasoning.
I like you so much.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it was D and even, well, anyways, no one will know what we're talking about. But anyways, it's one of those personality tests that you can look up online that puts your personality into four quadrants, and they're surprisingly accurate and revealing. But I don't know if that even if that is what you would recommend, Dan. But I mean, how do you how can we do a better job of understanding, maybe even before the hire or on our way into the hire, aside from at least understanding what we're looking for through our values, how do we evaluate a person to know whether whether they're likely to fit?
So that's a very good point. What I would say is a couple things. One, in general, be prepared for the discussion, right? So if it's a candidate, like I'm right now, I'm hiring a marketing person, and I'm to have a conversation with a candidate, and I'm like, you know what? I should probably prepare for this a little more than I am. And so it really is focused on getting them to talk. So open-ended questions. You know, I like to look into circumstances that they may have gone through in their life and, you know, kind of figured things out, right? A couple of words that are important to me in the context of my company are autonomous and ambitious. Whenever I talk to anybody or interview with them, I want to see those qualities kind of come shine through in the interview process. But yeah, to go back to your first comment about behavioral analysis has been around forever, right? It's something that it's a shame if we're not at least taking a peek at it. I can tell you that I would never use it to hire or fire. From a perspective of like my assistant, who I hired 6 years ago, Zoe, she had the exact same behavioral profile as me. And it was probably the reason why I liked her so much, obviously. She re reflected me, looked like me. But that's not the position I was hiring for. I was hiring for the opposite of me. I wanted somebody who was detail oriented, focused on getting things done right the first time, very procedurally focused, and she didn't have any of those qualities. So if I would have just strictly evaluated her on that, she would never have made the cut into the company. Now she's been with me 6 years, and what she did was we went over her behavioral profile and we said, this is going to be the challenge, is, you know, I'm trying to have this type of person in that role. So she had to change her behavior to reflect and make sure she accomplished those goals. Maybe spend a little extra time crossing her T's and dotting her I's versus moving on to the next big project, right? Which would be the natural thing she would want to do. So I would say that just understanding where a person comes from. I have a key employee in my company that is very conscientious and very thorough. And, I'm not going to use the word hokey or slow, but, in the context of where I'm at and I'm just running and gunning all over the place, I have to respect that. I have to recognize what that person is bringing to the table and reward it and congratulate them on what they're doing for me because they're making our company significantly more well-rounded. So that's where I would go with that. Their books, certainly, DISC is what you were thinking of. So, DISC profile looks at dominant, influential, steadfast or steady, and conscientious. So you can Google that, look it up online. Obviously you can reach out to us at Peer Groups. We are sellers of that product, asterisk. So if anybody is interested in that kind of thing, but we're really committed to trying to develop the employees and help your next level understand what it means to manage versus lead and why both are super important for your company.
It sounds like the behavioral analysis lends itself maybe a bit more to my next couple of questions, which I'm going to kind of mash together. I wanted to ask about looking at employees and understanding when you want to promote them, when you want to give them more responsibility in the organization, how you figure out that this person may be ready for that, and then. On the, I guess, sort of on the other end of that, when have you had enough? When is it just not working out, right? Or when is it time to put a little extra attention in? And like you said with your story about Zoe, I mean, you didn't just cut bait and walk away. You gave her an opportunity to try different things. And that all worked out, and I think a lot of companies have had that experience. So I mean, how do you see it as being the best way? I guess in a rental store, how are you going to know which direction that employee is going to go in?
Well, and a lot of that has to do with how quickly you're adding people to your to the positions, right? So I always like to talk about your company from an org chart perspective, and especially an org chart of the future, right? So you may have like roles and responsibilities in your company that you're sitting in three seats. Like we don't have an outside salesperson, but the owner's acting in that regard, or gosh, the counter guys are doing outside selling after 3 p.m. Like they're calling, hey, going over that list of customers from 2 years ago and kind of saying, hey, I haven't seen you in a while, and going following a script or whatever it might be. So because of that, because you can't necessarily have one body per role in your company, I think that's number one is to really understand, like, okay, I've got you in two to three different capacities right now. The other part was, going back to that conversation and being deliberate with it, I want to be able to give them some kind of score or some kind of measurement to make them feel better or to make them concerned, right? So it's a three strike you're out rule when it comes time to unload somebody. I'm never going to surprise anybody. I don't ever want anyone to be surprised they're getting let go. And if they are, then shame on me, right? That's the number one thing. So that comes down to talking about it objectively. The enemy is the paper, not the person sitting across from you, right? So, hey, I see here that, out of our four values, you're really not sticking with the one value, which is hard work ethic or whatever it might be. What does that mean? Well, a couple of situations have popped up and we've talked to you about it in the last period. So let's just keep an eye on that. So it becomes, when I look at it from a metric, it's like, do I have that value or don't I? And if I am not showing it 100%, I might be in the middle. So let's track that, and what's there might be an acceptable tolerance in the short term, and that's kind of what you have to set those parameters in advance so that you're having that conversation. Get it, want it, and have the capacity to do those job duties is the other part to it, which is really like, hey, we're working on this together. I'm developing you. Just because you get a score that's not 100 doesn't mean that you should be despondent. It should be, hey, we're all not perfect. We have to get to that next level. Quick word on compensation, and I'm going to say the next couple sentences, but I want you to recognize that this is theoretical and there's always cases, exceptions to the rule. I personally do not like to give raises unless someone is taking on more responsibility. So I will look at your duties and say, you've got 3 to 5 roles, and I want to see you perform those roles. Now, how you perform those roles could necessitate some bonus money, some incentive pay, right? So if you are like in my mind, and this goes way back, if you're a 3, you're getting on a scale of 1 to 5, you're a 3, you're getting the job done. And that's what you're getting paid for. It's fair. If you're performing at a 4 or 5 level, it means that there's some things you're doing that are pretty extraordinary about it. That's when I start to identify that candidate for some variable compensation, some bonus money. If they take on additional roles, or if they are performing activities in a different capacity than what they were hired to do, then by all means, we need to look at increases in pay. Now, this is notwithstanding what we call cost of living increases in the
Yeah,
US. I
inflation.
don't know if
That's
it's
what I was
different up in
thinking here
Canada.
when you were talking. Yeah, I was
Yeah.
going, what about inflation? But yeah, okay. So
Yeah.
there's
Wage-based inflation. Yep.
across the board bumps, but yeah, okay.
Correct. Correct. But I will say that it's important for owners to be able to go both ways with what I'm sharing here. So, there are some that are a little over generous and they speed the people through the pay. And then you're like, oh, they topped out. I hate when people say, oh, they topped out on pay. Well, they should never top out on pay. You should establish ranges that you're managing them through a range. They're getting all sorts of variable comp, which I'm a huge fan of variable comp. The more, the better. When things are great, share the wealth. When things are not great, share the pain. That's what that's all about. But I don't want to cut somebody's base pay that they're counting on. So I think that would be the key takeaway. But I will say, with what's happening right now with the cost of labor, there is a thing called true cost of labor, where you're actually getting it down on paper and understanding what that employee is costing you and what your expectations should be for that cost. So they might look at their net pay and say, well, this is my net pay, this is what I make. Well, if they're going to go have conversations with competitive environments or other job options, you're hosed, right? You're not going to be able to compete against that. So what you need them to do is you need to educate them on the cost to the company. We have employees that make $65,000 gross, but their true cost is over 100, and it's because of the way we treat benefits. We have a very strong healthcare plan, very strong qualified plans down in the US, they're called, which are additional savings plans. And then we have paid time off, and we're very gracious and generous with the paid time off policy. So I think it's important that owners jump on that very quickly. Otherwise, I get a call and they're like, I'm losing my lead mechanic because he's going to get $4 more an hour across the street. Well, he may be giving 3 of those $4 back because he's losing your benefits when going over to that business. So I think it's important for you to stay on top of that.
Things like that some of the background stuff, a lot of the stuff in the culture conversation, but also, even the small perks, even okay, we're relaxed on time off, that kind of thing. Wow, what an impact. You will get people to accept less money in pay if it's a pleasant place to work like that. I've seen it 1,000 times. It's so much. It has a huge impact, and it's something everybody should think about. Dan, incredible insights on the whole labor approach. I knew you would have that for me after seeing the talk at the conference, which was great. I can't let you go because you're a guy who it from the political world is basically running focus groups for rental stores. Is what a peer executive peer groups does. A little bit of industry talk. What are you hearing from your members? I don't know if you've done it, had a Canadian group go recently, but if you have, especially them, what are you hearing? What are they complaining about? What are they happy with? What's on everyone's minds?
No, that's a great question. Yeah, that is definitely we're seeing going into 2024 a bit of a downturn. We don't expect to finish the year up, and what we mean by that is one little insight. Every one of our members do a thing called rate of change, where we look at their top line revenue every month, every quarter, and every 12 months, and we compare it to the previous periods. And it gives us a percentage change. So we're able to say, you know, hey, the industry grew 4% last year, peer group members grew 8%, or so forth, so on, something like that. We can look at event rental versus equipment rental and all that good stuff. To get there, we have to focus on lead indicators. So on the construction side, we're looking at the Architectural Billings Index, which tells us, you know, are architects billing and are they billing more or less than they were the same period last time, right? So that kind of thing. So we look for that number. The magic number is to be above 50. If it's below 50, we know there's probably going to be a little bit of downturn. We also have lead indicators that focus on commercial versus residential building. We have indicators around general consumption and manufacturing, and that helps us for the event rental side. All those indicators are pointing, and you may have heard this the last couple of days, to a down 2024. It's not going to be significant. It's going to be just a downturn. So that's important because if our members are planning growth, which we hope they are, it means they're taking market share. So taking market share from your competitors is different than growing with the times, right? That kind of thing. So that's definitely, you know, number one is facing that short-term, you know, component. I would say, you know, 2025 looks to be better. 2026 looks to be good. So there's going to be some spending, and in the U.S. markets specifically, I think you're going to see people continue to spend money on tools for residential because residential did bottom out last year in the U.S. In the summertime, and so now that's on the back, coming back. And we also found that, on the commercial side, and infrastructure money in the U.S. has not been spent. So compare the same thing to Canada. There's some really good economic forecasting for Canada, both from a company called ITR, as well as what Natalie and the Canadian Rental Association gets out to the market on their regular reports. I've read some of those, and I feel good about that. But the second most important thing to be aware of is your industry is focused on inventory management. Now, what does that mean? That means that you're going to have to buy rental assets, and you're also going to have to get rid of old rental assets. That's going to be a problem. And the reason why it's a problem is the margins on selling used equipment have gone back down. They were big, they were up a couple of years ago. They've gone back down, and the cost of new equipment has gone up pretty significantly. So to get into the industry and play this game of we call it well, you're going to decrease, you're going to refresh your rental assets. So refreshing is going to cost you more than ever. And so it's a little different game. It's a lot more stressful. You're going to need to have a stronger balance sheet. And in the past, you used to get by with not having to be super healthy on your balance sheet. And now it's like, hey, we need to be healthy on the balance sheet. So it means taking a little bit less distribution out of the company, leaving it there to be used to manage your way through this discrepancy on new equipment costs versus used equipment sale prices.
Might be looking for a little more durability. Might be
Oh,
looking
great
for
point.
a longer longer maintenance life. Yeah, it could change. It could change how you approach your equipment by a little bit.
Beautiful. Yep.
The other thing that makes me think about is you electrification, battery is all we've been hearing about for a couple of years now. Good reasons for that. But the manufacturers are certainly very keen to get that rolling because they've invested so much in developing these products. And you know, we're sort of partners and customers, right, in a lot of cases. But that makes it tough. Do I want to take a flyer on the battery backhoe when I'm uneasy about the strength of the used market, when I don't really want to be speculating on equipment right now, right? It's
Correct.
kind of a dilemma there a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely catch 22, and you bring up all the right points. I mean, that's the dialoguing that happens inside our peer groups. If 10 guys get together, and men and women get together in the room in the spring and the fall, and they have those conversations with each other, and it really dictates a lot. It has a lot to do with how they're going to go forward, what categories of assets they're going to focus in.
Yeah. Well, based on the discussion at the conference, Dan, I think everybody was going to run out of that room and buy a tent hawk. So that was that looks like the hot new product for
I know. I
2024.
love it. I saw a Tenox hat and 2 days ago at another show, and I'm like, oh, I need to get one of those.
Yeah, we're talking inside baseball here, but Dan's panel at the show was practically taken over by this giant conversation about the wonders of the TEDx and what it can do for your event rental company, which sounds great. Maybe I'll have to, hey, come sponsor us, TEDx. We love you.
Yes.
Listen, Dan, this has been fun. I really appreciate your insights. And I may I may have to hook you back on again to talk about other aspects. We hit labor good and hard today, but of course there's a million other things in your rental business that we could be touching on, and you get to hear it all. So Dan Crowley, Executive Peer Group. Dan, where do people reach out? Where do they find you? Should they have
Sure.
questions or want to get involved in a peer group for maybe?
Absolutely. Well, number one, keep in touch with your associations. So the Canadian Rental Association, the American Rental Association, any association you're part of. It even could be Matra, which is a manufacturer of tents. Reach out to all those. Those are the people that we connect with peer executive groups. We are partnered with a number of those operations, and our website is just simply www.peerexecutivegroups.com, right? So it's a little nebulous of a name. I wish we would have called it like Jaguar or something more catchy.
Yeah.
Peer. And peer is spent P-E is spelled P-E-E-R. So peerexecutivegroups.com. And from there's a number of ways to get in touch with us. We added 100 new members last year, a number of Canadians. And again, this year, it looks like we've got about 25 already in the first quarter, which is perfect. So we're looking to start up some new groups, especially in Canada. So, really got to know a lot of the towns in Canada over the last 2 years of spending time up there. So I do appreciate the area. Love to get more active up there. Patrick Tunnicliffe is our Johnny on the spot. He lives in the Vancouver market and has been in rental forever. So he is our immediate consultant in the marketplace up there.
Great. Great to know. Dan, thanks so much for your time and your insights. I encourage everybody to check out Peer Executive Groups, and we'll hopefully be talking again soon.
Excellent. Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for Counter Talks. You can find Countertalks episodes online at CanadianRentalService.com or on the major podcasting services. Countertalks is a presentation of Canadian Rental Service Magazine.